Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
Greetings, humans. You have entered the command zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
Here it goes again. Oh, here it goes again. I should've known again.
Here it goes. One more time. It's 2021 when you're watching this.
Happy New Year, everybody.
How are you? I am Jimmy Wong, one of the co-hosts of the Command Zone podcast.
You almost stole my line.
Yeah.
How's it? It's Josh Lee Kwai.
It's kind of the end of year episode, but it's actually the beginning of a new year when you're watching this, because we just had so much to cover in the quote-unquote year of Commander, and that's exactly what we're talking about today.
Yeah, we're going to start off 2021 by looking back at 2020.
Indeed.
So Gavin came on our channel in late 2019 and sort of talked about the year of Commander that was going to be 2020, which was we just got done, you know, experiencing. And the big catchphrase for the whole year was, it's a great time to be a Commander player.
Yeah, and I think that's generally true. Morrow recently said on his blog as well that, yes, Commander is the most popular format.
Just straight up,
yeah. It was edging towards it for a while. There was like a poll on his Twitter a long time ago where it was 50-50 with draft. So we're going to look at all of the things that Gavin and Watsi talked about, as well as sort of review what happened in the year, where we came from, where we might be going, how we feel.
Yeah, was the year of Commander a success?
Mm-hmm. I'll tell you one thing that is a success, though. Ordering from cardkingdom.com/command zone, because they have some of the best customer service in the business. I've had multiple people message me saying, I asked for one kind of this token and they hand drew me like 10 rock tokens. I think someone was inspired by your Tago deck.
Wow, I'm jealous. I wish I could have those rock tokens.
Yeah, so if you want to buy Magic cards, whether it's singles, sealed product, or whatever, it's a great way to kick off the new year. It's also a great gift to yourself, to someone else, if you missed Christmas or any of the holidays. Because,
or you have like some Christmas cash or holiday cash. Like,
that's a good idea too.
That's the best gift that I always like receiving, is just money, and then I can spend it on Magic cards.
I also like to brew decks around the Christmas time because I have so much more time to actually open up my binder and not worry about having to clean it up the next day before work or whatever it is. Yep. So cardkingdom.com/command zone, you're supporting this channel, but you're also getting the thing that you love most, Magic cards.
Kaldheim also right on the horizon.
Oh.
If you can't pre-order it yet, which I think you maybe can, but even if not, it'll be very, very soon. So keep your eyes out for it. It looks pretty sweet.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, Ultra Pro is our other sponsor. They make all the stuff that protects your Magic cards. So we're talking playmats, deck boxes, sleeves, and they also always have the license for the actual Magic art. So you can theme your decks out to, like, I'm sure the Kaldheim stuff is coming out with Ultra Pro, meaning that if you have a certain legendary creature you want to build around, there's a good chance that they make a playmat that has that legendary creature on it, that they have sleeves, deck boxes with that legendary creature on it.
And now they have all these alternate arts and showcase arts in the frames as well. And what they've done with the Kaldheim frames is really cool.
So yeah, you're going to see some of frame.
Yeah, it looks like hand etched and stuff. Yeah. So you're going to see some of that on playmats as well. And Ultra Pro, the only place to get it.
All right. The final way to support all of our content is directly if you go to patreon.com/command zone. All kinds of perks. One thing you get to do is watch game nights and extra turns earlier than the general public. You also get to talk with Jimmy and I on our Discord each and every single day. And of course, one of the coolest perks is that we select one random patron every single episode. And this episode is dedicated to Hayden Steele. Hayden.
Wow.
Cool name and you rock.
Yeah, it's kind of Kaldheim flavored.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very nice.
All right, let's move into the main topic here, which is how good was the Year of Commander?
Pretty good, but there's a lot to discuss because boy, oh boy, this is a hefty outline today. Yeah. So again, Gavin visited our set last year. You guys are more than welcome to watch that video and see what we talked about and then compare it to what happened this year. But watch this video first. He also released an article alongside our video, and we're going to start there because he wrote down three key learnings that Wizards of the Coast was focused on, and we're paraphrasing some of the notes from the article.
This is stuff he wrote in late 2019,
right? Yeah, yeah. Okay. 2019, actually on October 30th. Okay. So the first thing was there is a huge appetite for Commander. The first official Commander product came out in 2011, and now Commander is now confirmed. At the time, I think there was still a little like, oh, maybe it is, maybe it isn't. The most popular format in Magic. And there used to be more sparse products for players. There was the Commander Anthology, Battle Bond, and Conspiracy were kind of flavored towards Commander players. So the plan for this next year, for 2020, which we just had, was to create more products and things for all kinds of Commander players.
The second point was that players need reprints. So even in late 2019, they were saying the format of Commander is growing, reprints are needed. Even cards that have been reprinted recently.
Yep, they made a point to say that. Yeah.
Yeah, might need to be reprinted again. You need access to the staples for a deck, so more Commander-focused products means more opportunities to reprint these cards. And then we have in quotes here, I think many of you will be happy with the reprints coming throughout 2020. So this is something they said in late 2019. We're going to find out later if that right. promise was fulfilled, right?
And Gavin even said, I look forward to seeing this quoted on the internet later. So he knew. And the last point that he made is that people are learning through Commander. And Gavin said that many players are coming into Magic through Commander or picking up Commander early sort of in their Magic careers. And, you know, everyone realizes that Commander might not be the ideal way to learn Magic. Four players, 100 card decks, singleton format, a lot to process.
Huge card pool.
Yeah. But many players are still doing it that way because they want to do what their friends are doing. And as the most popular format, there's a high likelihood that your friends are playing Commander. So they wanted to make a landing pad for Commander players as well.
Yeah, it doesn't matter if it's the best way or not. If that's what people are doing, then you should try and like make it at least work for them. Okay, so we're going to be covering these points across the episode today, but it's good to know what Watsi and Gavin identified sort of as you put the North Star guiding points for Commander design needs for 2020.
All right, so let's dive into what actually happened this year, and oh boy, it's a lot.
Last year, sorry.
And we're not even covering everything, by the way. We're covering everything I think that is most sort of pertinent to Commander players, and we'll go through in chronological order very quickly here.
Okay.
So
I'm assuming that our editors will create some sort of graphic on screen that keeps track of all the stuff we're about to say, because we're going to go through all the products, not all, but the major products that were released last year.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy to forget, but we started the year with Theros Beyond Death. That came out on January 24th.
Yep.
This was a regular set and more similar to the old style of set in that there were no Commander decks tied to this set.
Yep. And so, yeah, we had the game nights for at the beginning of the year.
It was Crim and Ashlyn,
right. And there were a lot of cards further in Commander, and they were great for Commander, but it wasn't sort of like, I think, the year of Commander. It hadn't really like officially begun yet, I think.
Right.
The second big product to come out, and this is one that we'll talk a lot about today, is the Mystery Booster product. Originally, this was a product that was only available in conventions, and there was a special convention edition, but in March, they released it as a retail edition with reprints across Magic's history going as far back as Mirage, supplemental sets, and there were 1,694 cards of equal rarity.
So, 1,700 card set.
But you could get these booster boxes. I think they're still easy to get now. So it's definitely a product that they were hoping to introduce a lot of reprints to the format, I think.
Yeah, we've called it the greatest PyGal magic product.
Yeah, or Chaos Drafting would be amazing with it too.
Yeah, that's really what it was supposed to be. It was supposed to be Chaos Drafting dot set.
Yeah.
Dot deck, dot set. That works. All right, the third major product to come out last year was the Ikoria set. This was on April 17th. Again, a regular set, but it was the first time we ever had Commander decks, Commander pre-cons, come out and be tied to a specific standard legal set. So Ikoria was the Monster Mutate set.
And not just regular Commander decks. This was the Commander 2020 release. Normally, it happens in like August or even December in years past. Now it's happening as early as April. And instead of four decks this year, they made five.
They went back to five, right?
Yeah, went back
for a while.
Oh, you're right.
Four for a while, then went back to five now.
71 total new cards, and one deck was directly tied to the set, which was like the Mutate Otrimi deck.
Yeah, and the Cathedral deck too, right?
Yeah, because of the ability counters.
Ability counters. So there was a couple, yeah. So yeah. Ikoria Commander, which came out at the same time as Ikoria, but was really what we referred to as the C20, the mm-hmm. Commander 20 product. Because before, we'd have like C19, C18, C17.
Yep. That also had Gavi Nest Warden, Jarena Kudrow. So it was three colors and had a lot of interesting cards in there. But, you know, kind of took me by surprise. It was so early in the year to start thinking about the big Commander release.
And it was interesting to be dealing with Commander release at the same time another set's coming out, right? Yeah. We're always used to having the Commander product come out and be its own thing and have its own time period that you're discussing it.
Some breathing room, maybe?
We'll go into this a little bit more.
Yeah.
Let's keep going down the calendar here. So the next product was kind of the fifth major product that came out in 2020, which was Corset 2021, M21.
It's like a car. It always comes out a year early.
Yeah, I think they name it that way because of big box retailers like Walmart and Target, and they don't want to keep things on their shelf that have the previous year.
Oh, that's
what I've always heard. So they always name it 1 year ahead. This came out on July 3rd. Again, it was more like a regular core set that we're used to in the past. No Commander decks were tied to this set.
Yep. Thank goodness.
Yeah.
The next thing to come out was Jumpstart on July 17th, and this was a new format. This was a new way to play. It was aimed at players to just get into Magic really quickly. You know, we've heard of Pie Down Magic or sort of like, you know, booster, you know, flip cards and see what CMC wins. But Jumpstart had these cool packs that you would take two of them randomly, shuffle them together, and then you would make a 40-card deck, and then boom, you could immediately play with your friends. So
yeah, pretty cool idea. Jumpstart was beleaguered by like production issues. Pandemic was in full swing at this point, so yes. They ran into a bunch of issues with that. I got to play it a little bit on Arena, which ended up being quite a bit of fun. Yeah, there was brand new cards in this, though. It was mostly reprints, but there were a few brand new cards, notably a bunch of legendary creatures.
Yeah.
But again, this set was hard to get a hold of, and they had production issues. So to this day, it's actually kind of hard to find the cards from Jumpstart. Mm-hmm. We keep saying this, but I still think it's true. I hope they reprint the whole thing again so that more cards get out into the wild.
I hope they do that for Commander Legends, too, to be honest. I would like to have this year back so I can play it in person with people.
The next big major release was Double Masters. This was on August 7th, and this was similar to Master sets in the past. It was a draft set entirely of reprints, but this was a set where each booster pack included two rares, yeah, or mythics, and you got more cards per pack and everything like that, and so that was kind of that was just the hook for whatever this set was, right?
Yeah, guaranteed foil. You would draft it a little differently as well. Again, we weren't able to really experience this in person, so a lot of people played it online. But Double Masters and sort of Eternal Masters and the Master sets in the past have sort of been seen as hey, Commander players, this is kind of for you, to be honest. Next up was Zendikar Rising, which is a set that is our background behind us right now. It was released on September 25th, and this was a main set back to Zendikar. We knew this was coming, obviously, because they announced this very early on. And then we had these really cool modal DFC cards that came in, the new lands and all that stuff.
Yep, and with that set, this was the first time that this ever happened. They started releasing what we're calling the set decks, the Commander Precons. There's only two of them. They're more geared towards newer players, but there was two for Zendikar Rising.
Anawan.
And Oboon.
Oboon, that's right.
Yeah. So they're supposedly, and I don't think they've said for every single set, but for most sets now moving forward, they're going to be accompanied by two Commander Precons. Mm-hmm. It gets confusing because these are not the same Precons as the Commander product Precons, like the ones that came with Ikoria that we're used to.
Right.
We're still, I guess the community at large is still trying to figure out the terminology for these things. So it makes it hard to talk about them when they sound the same. But the Commander decks from Zendikar Rising are not the same as the Commander decks from Ikoria.
Yeah.
Hopefully that makes sense to everybody out there.
Yeah, but they did say that the reprints can be from anywhere. So this was another vehicle, I think, for them to reprint some cards. And if you go back and watch our set deck reviews, we go through all of that and talk about what gets reprinted.
Oh, yeah. And we should say in the set decks, the one where there's only two of them, there's less new cards in those precons. There's only three new cards, whereas in the Commander product, like Ikoria, those Commander decks have, you know, 13, 14, sometimes 20 new cards.
Yeah, but notably, the Commanders are brand new, and that is, I think, again, like, it's a great entry point, and the price point's a little lower, too. I think this was sort of
like $25-ish.
Yeah, harkening back to their point that they want to make Commander a better landing pad for new players. The next set was the one that we spent the last 10 weeks covering. It's Commander Legends, came out on November 20th, and we pumped out episode after episode because there were 70 brand new legendary creatures, a whole host of new partner creatures, new partner in monocolor pairings as well, and it was also a draftable commander set, so in the 99 was a ton of cards as well.
Yeah, this is the biggest set we've ever had to cover. And you could probably tell, we ended up doing like, what, 11 episodes just reviewing the cards from the set, because there were so many new cards. Most sets come out and they have 15-ish legendary creatures, so that's just one video. This one had 70, so all of a sudden that's five videos just for legendary creatures. And then most sets have, you know, two or three cards per color that we want to talk about in the set review. This one had so many more because it was designed for Commander.
Yeah.
Yeah, so a really big set for us and for the format of Commander, and we'll talk about how we think Commander Legends did, but it was everything that that they promised it would be, as far as like it made a big splash.
It definitely made a big splash. And just like Zendikar Rising had a set deck with it, Commander Legends was considered, I guess, a normal enough set release that they also released two additional decks. There are only three new cards in them, but again, one of them was the front-facing Commander, and these were cards that, you know, sort of paired kind of well with Commander Legends, but again, were separate from the set, but had their own decks. They're easier entry points. There's a lot of things to consider.
Okay. I'm going to propose something here, Jimmy. Let's see if you're open to it.
Oh, okay.
I want to call these mini Commander decks.
Ooh, mini.
I know Wizards won't like that terminology because it makes them sound smaller. But I think that in order to separate regular Commander product that we've been used to in the past that come that come with like 15 new cards, you know, three new legendaries.
Yeah.
Those are the Commander precons. The Commander product precons.
The jumbo Commanders.
Yeah.
Because they do come in the jumbo size.
Yeah, that's true. There are not oversized cards for these mini Commander precons. So the mini Commander precons, we got with Zendikar Rising and Commander Legends. I think that's what we should call them from now on.
I love it. Right. I have a counter suggestion. Uh-oh. What if we called it Tiny Leaders? Just kidding. Okay.
And then there was a last product. And you know what? This is the very first time we're talking about this product on our show because we've spent so long talking about Commander Legends. So it came and went, or it's still available, obviously. But I mean, it came out on December 4th and we just haven't been able to address it until now.
But it wasn't the video that we actually previewed a card from it in the video with Gavin.
In the video with Gavin in 2019, talking about the Year of Commander, we did talk about this product. It was the Commander Collection Green. And this was for WPN stores only. It came, or it comes in foil and non-foil versions, and I believe it's eight green or green-themed cards. They say that because there is a Soul Ring and a Command Tower in it, but the art is green-themed in both of those, although technically you could put those in a blue deck if you wanted to. That would be weird, but you could do it. And they reprinted things like Bane of Progress and
Worldly Tutor,
Sylvan Library.
But the idea that these were green Commander staples, they are the cards that if you're going to play green, you could definitely use every single card in this sort of collection.
Seedborn Muse was the other preview, I think.
Yep.
Yeah, and I think we didn't cover it because, you know, there's not a lot to say about that product. If you want those cards or need those cards, then it's probably a decent one to get.
A lot of people also aren't going to their physical stores, which is where the place you would get it as well. But
I mean, you can still order online, obviously.
Yeah. But the nice thing is that they did, you know, all these cards are pretty playable and they are used quite often. So they did fulfill that part of it, I think.
All right, so that's the major releases for the year. There were 12 of them. There are only 12 months in a year. So like average out one per month, sort of fairly major commander focused, or at least, you know, a standard set, I would say, affects commander a decent amount. Product.
We're talking about hundreds of new cards as well. Normally in a year, I mean, let's think about back to like our first year as a podcast. We had the major commander releases, Conspiracy, and then just your three sets, your core set, and then two other sets.
Yeah. Three sets.
This is basically double that. And that number has been going up, I think, since we started the podcast. And Josh and I feel a brunt of it every year.
So that was a lot. And we should talk about one other thing here.
Yes.
Because this is another new thing they started doing. And they did a lot of this year because they tested it at the end of 2019. It's the Secret Lair stuff. So there's these drops that are available on a certain website for limited amount of time. And they're usually reprints and new art.
Yeah.
Of certain
almost
cards.
Always new reprints.
I'm gonna say usually, but it's not always, as we learned, and we'll talk about that too. There were 26 of these, although
what?
Although there were actually 27 if you count the Ultimate Edition, which was the Fetchland one, but that one went only into stores.
Yeah, and was kind of a joke, all things considered, in terms of value and all that.
Right.
But yeah, 26 secret lairs.
There's 52 weeks in a year, so that's one every other week if you average it out.
Right.
They came out with like five right at the end all at once, so that kind of bumped the average, I think. But still.
Yeah, definitely.
I guess, Jimmy, we're going to discuss how the year went. Do you want to start with secret lairs? Like,
yeah.
What do you think about secret lairs in general? Obviously, we'll cover the Walking Dead thing very quickly on its own.
Yeah.
So let's put that aside for now. But just the idea of secret lairs and secret lairs, you know, as executed, what do you think?
I think the number one issue that a lot of players have identified, and people like Professor speak to this as well, is that this does kind of affect the local game store quite a bit, because Wizards is essentially saying that, hey, look, we're selling what is akin to singles in a lot of ways, but they just come in these packages and they're special foiled or blinged out versions of those cards. I'm someone that sort of analyzes and watches the market. Every single one of these secret lairs, the card values of all of them, they'll sell for much more than they actually cost. So these are clearly highly sought after. They're clearly collectible.
And wait, you mean the card singles, once you have them, will sell for more than you paid for the secret lair?
Yeah, so let's say you paid $30 for a secret lair. You try and sell, you buy it, you sell all the cards individually. You're going to get more than those $30 if you sell it for the price that they're going for. So every single one of those cards gained value. And I think that is something that's actually really interesting, because it means that these have value. They're not just sort of things that you can ignore, because they're also limited sale. Players would definitely want to get their hands on them. And I personally, I like them. I like the cards. I think the art's really cool. I think it's a cool way to get new arts on some classic Commander cards. It's a fun time to also see some joke cards get in there too, and joke art and stuff. They had like a Year of the Rat themed one that was really neat. So I personally do like it, but 26 of them in a year for a collector, that's a serious dent in anyone's wallet. So I don't like it for that fact. I think if they slowed down the pace of it, it would be a little nicer, but for me, it just sort of sits in this weird zone where I don't want to just keep having to shell out for these things because they're so exclusive.
Yeah, they're really trying to capitalize on that FOMO thing, right? Where it's like, oh boy, if I don't get it now, it's going to be more expensive later. So it's not just do I want it, it's also will I ever want it?
Yeah.
Because a lot of times that art is exclusive and maybe not ever exist on a version of that card again. I mean, we don't know, right?
Yeah.
They haven't made a lot of rules, hard and fast rules about how this is going to work. But like, if you want, you know, that particular Bitter Blossom or those tokens,
you got to get the set.
Probably got to get the secret lair version. It's probably unlikely to pop up again in that exact same form somewhere else. They might reprint Bitter Blossom, but, you know, with different whatever, art, showcase, whatever, the different foiling. Whatever.
Yeah.
I have no idea, but with slight tweaks. I like what you said about so many of them. I think I had to reprogram my brain, because when it started happening, I was like, oh, I bought the first one, bought the second one. You know, we have a Magic podcast. We obviously like Magic cards. And then by like the fourth or fifth one, I was like, oh, I'm not going to be able to keep up. I just threw away the idea that I would ever have all of them. And now I just look at each one and be like, do I want those cards?
Yeah.
And so like when they did the gods from original Theros and stuff, I was like, oh, I want those. So I bought, you know, that one. But then I was like, a lot of them, I'm like, nah, no interest. Don't need those cards.
Yeah. And some of them they're not like Commander focused either. And I don't know if this plays into the year of Commander, because this feels like it's something different, but there were a lot of staples along the way, but it wasn't like a Commander collection type thing. So I feel that is nice in that it is more targeting the players that want to have like their Yargle themed cards or whatever it is. And so it's a little less targeted, but it still is just overwhelming, especially the end of year 5 mega drop bundle. If you want to get all of them, it's hundreds of dollars. It's like, oh gosh.
Did you get the 5 mega drop bundle?
I did.
I did not. Yeah. Interesting, because I get a lot more sealed product than you in general.
I took a break as well. Because
how many boxes of Commander Legends did you buy?
I didn't get any this year because I figured, you know,
I got a case.
It's going to be around, so I'll hopefully be able to pick up the singles and whatever, but I'd rather, you know, get this exclusive thing. And I get that FOMO bit quite a bit. And these sales, it's not like, you know, our Kickstarters run for a month. We give people a lot of time to do it. And the reason that we do it is because we don't want to keep stock. It's easier for us to fill it this way. These go for a day, 2 days, 3 days sometimes. And it really does kind of catch you off guard. Because if you don't have, let's say, you know, your paycheck or your funds at that moment, it feels really difficult to get these sorts of things.
Yeah. I just think it's interesting, that dichotomy with different kinds of personality types and people.
Right.
Whereas like, you got that, I got more boxes of Commander Legends, just thinking like, well, I want to have those so that hopefully next year when the pandemic's over, we can actually draft this thing.
Right.
So I want to have a number of boxes, and I don't know if they're going to reprint it. So it was the same kind of deal. And but the secret layers just don't speak to me that much.
It's tough. I think we have to just table set Magic and WotC and Hasbro are all companies that are ultimately going to be focused on making a profit.
Yeah.
And Secret Lair, from what it seems, from what they've told us, seems to be a really successful way for them to make money. So I don't think it's going anywhere anytime soon. So a lot of our grievances are just going to still be there with it.
I don't, and my grievances aren't super large, right? Like, it's just not necessarily for me most of the time, and that's totally fine.
Yeah. All right. Until there was one Secret Lair that made everyone very angry and upset, righteously so, I think, in a lot of ways. People got very angry about the Walking Dead Secret Lair, which, because it created cards that had never existed before, they were legendary creatures, so it felt like just like, hey, Commander players, look at this. And it was hard not to look.
Yeah. There was a whole bunch of reasons why people were mad about this. And Jimmy, we laid out our opinions in an entire video.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Walking Dead Secret Lair Exposed or something like that.
It's one of the only Secret Lairs I did not buy, by the way, just so everyone knows.
So this is a thing where it kind of felt like if you were ever want those cards, and they are Commander illegal, and it's the only place, as far as we know, that you'll ever be able to get them, although they have said since that they could reprint these cards. But at the time, it was unclear.
A little damage control, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, there's a lot of hullabaloo. If you're around the Magic community, you knew what that was. I don't want to go into it all right here, because we already did it.
Watch our video. Yeah. We
laid out our
it.
Opinion about it. But Thank anyway, goodness. That was a thing that happened.
Thank goodness people stopped tweeting me about it, too.
All right, let's talk about the Commander product that's been tied to set releases. So, Ikoria, Zendikar Rising, Commander Legends. We now have Commander Precon decks and Mini Commander decks.
Mm-hmm.
See what I did there?
I like it.
That come with each product now. I don't know if it's going to be everyone moving forward, but a lot of them. What do you think about this? Because from a content creator standpoint is one thing, and then from, you know what I mean?
Right, right. I mean, we had a lot of episodes this year that were just kind of solely dedicated to doing card reviews, deck upgrades, and that is kind of exhausting from a content creator standpoint, because it doesn't let us do some of the more informative and interesting episodes like The Art of War, X Magic, you know? And so it is nice because you know that you have an episode to do and it's going to serve the player base and you're helping the player base out. But at the same time, it doesn't let you flex as hard as you want to. But we're also really busy here, so it's kind of a weird balance, I think.
Yeah, I think separating our content creator selves is difficult, because if you're an average person out there, you don't have the same exhaustion maybe that we have. But man, when the Commander Precon decks for Commander Legends came out, it was just like, we already got to do a million videos, and now we got to do two videos about these decks.
Yeah.
And it wasn't, I don't want to sound like, oh, we're Woe being forced
me.
To do the,
yeah,
exactly. It's just, you do have that little voice in your head that's like, man, this is a lot that we have to do. And I kind of, that makes you say, in your head, that little voice says, I kind of wish they didn't make these mini commander decks, because then we wouldn't have to make these pre-con upgrades for them. Yeah. But I mean, I hope they've been popular. I have no read right now on the community because of the pandemic and whether or not these were successful in what they're supposed to do, which is
right.
Give sort of a nice landing pad or a launching place for new players to get into Commander.
Yeah,
I'd like to hear from people out there in the comments and things like that. If you think that the mini Commander decks were successful.
Yeah, did you buy them? Did you upgrade them? Did you give it to a new player? What
are
did you
do? A new player that got into Commander because of them?
Mm-hmm.
Or they helped you, maybe not because of them, but you wanted to get in and you were like, oh, this is a nice, you know, way to help me get in.
Even if you're a new player and you didn't get them, are you thinking, hey, this actually would have been a nice way to start, or, you know, like just even looking in retrospect and seeing whether or not you think you would like it. You know, I think ultimately, if it did succeed in that and brought players in and gave them a safe and easy way to sort of beginning to play the format, then thumbs up for me. My content creator side itself, that's the most important part. I remember playing Commander for the first time and I kind of didn't have a great time because I was so overwhelmed with what was happening. Everyone's like, here's my sick deck. I'm like,
Wait, I had to read every card
give
everyone
me, played? Yeah, I'm sorry. Give me like 10 minutes just to get through my opening hand. Okay.
Yeah, I would love to hear from people out there and your experience.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
This is a hard thing to get a read on when you're an experienced player. So it'll be nice to hear from some newer players.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about the big one. We're not going to break down every set or anything. So let's talk about Commander Legends, though.
Yep, 70 new legends across 10 episodes. We covered all of it, or 11. Tons of new playable cards for the 99, and a bunch of new partners that were monocolored as well. I think we can generally say it was definitely a success, but there were a couple of problematic things that we also addressed this year.
Yeah, there were three cards we kind of called out as problematic that we didn't really love. Jeweled Lotus, Hole Breacher, Opposition Agent. I think we both can agree that we don't think those are the healthiest for the format. We don't like the design on those. We kind of wish those didn't exist. But that's actually pretty good when you think about it, right? If at the start of the year I had said, they're going to come out with a set, it's designed around a commander, it has 70 new legends, it's all about drafting commander, all those cards are supposed to be, you know, there's a bunch of new cards that are going to be good, you know, designed for the format. Over under, how many of those cards do you think you're going to be like, I wish they didn't do that?
I would have given like 20%, honestly, because I'm like, dang, that's a big design thing to fill. That box is massive.
So for them to only have three cards in that set that are like borderline to us, I actually think is well, it's well under what I would have guessed, right? Like,
yeah.
Listen, their design, like designing is an art form. It's a creative form. They're guessing at a lot of things. So to ask them to be able to just pinpoint sniper rifle, hit the bullseye every time, I don't think it's possible, which is why mistakes are made, because they got to push boundaries. They got to try stuff. So
Gavin's also been doing this for what, 6 years working on this set? So yeah. He's been trying to snipe from the past to the future as well. So there's a lot of room for error there if they're not careful.
Yeah, so I think actually like the three cards are very, very, very forgivable.
And they're clearly the pushed ones too.
Yeah.
Because I think if you look at the rest of the set, there's nothing that really creeps towards that insane power level compared to those three.
And we have all the partners. Like if you would have told me, hey, there's 40 new partners.
Oh, man.
I mean, like the last time they did what? What'd they start with? 16 of them?
Yeah.
However many they start, 12? I forget. But there were already like three or four in there that were broken. So I would have said, oh, well, of the 40, there's going to be 10 that are absolutely broken.
Or pushed in the wrong way or unhealthy or whatever it is.
Yeah. And yet, all the new partners
are great.
Kind of hit like a really nice sweet spot so far. It's pretty early. So we may find that one or two of them is kind of more pushed than we realize at this moment. But right now, I don't think there's any that I'm like, well, they shouldn't have done that.
Well, the nice thing is that as mono-colored, they don't bust the format open as much, because with the two-color ones, you pair them with another two-color one, now you have a four-color deck, and now you're into CDH territory because of the access to cards, they're low CMC. Keeping it to mono-colored, and then focusing on like themes and lesser-used things in Magic's history, or playing in spaces that they haven't played as much in, I honestly think that partner, that series of partners is some of the best design work that I've ever seen from Commander stuff.
Really, the only ones that are broken are the ones that are broken when you put them with Thrasios, who's already broken, you know, or Timno, or one of the other old broken ones.
Yeah,
so pretty impressive, actually, I'd say, as a design feat. I think, you know, this set is kind of a home run. They did a really great job with it. And so many, like, we said that about the partners, right? But the non-partner legendary creatures, a lot of awesome designs, and nothing in there that's insanely, like, broken. Like, the cards we complain about are the Chulainn's and the Arcs and stuff of the world. It didn't feel like that this set had a lot of that.
Yeah, thank goodness.
Yeah.
So the question I have, a couple of them, what does this year look like without Commander Legends? Is it still a great time to be a Commander player? What does this year look like if it's only Commander Legends? Because if it's only Commander Legends, I think it's still a great time to be a Commander player, because this single set, honestly, I don't even need to look at the other sets. This set alone could have filled my appetite for a whole year. There's so much going on here.
Yeah. It's interesting because I think if you look at the rest of the year without Commander Legends, it's only has the two mini Commander decks that come out with Zendikar Rising.
Yeah.
And then, you know, if they did it for whatever set came in place of Commander Legends, that really differentiates it that much from a normal year. You know what I mean? Like, there's a core set, there's a master set, there's a bunch of standard legal sets. There's like one extra set in Mystery Boosters, but that's not really specifically for Commander. It would have been a good extra Commander set, but Commander Legends is really what sort of puts it into the category of like, this is abnormal for the amount of Commander stuff that's come in, and abnormal because Commander Legends brings with it
a swath
of stuff. Yeah, so Commander Legends really is what caused it to be the year of Commander, which is ironic because it came at the very end of the year. But
yeah, so here's the question: should we be like, we loved Conspiracy so much we were screaming for Conspiracy 2 and we got it, should Commander players be doing the same for Commander Legends 2.0?
Yeah, it's an interesting question, because as much as I think Commander Legends was a quite big success, and it's amazing because you and I didn't even barely get to draft it because of the state of the world, right? We just can't get eight people in a room to draft it. So it might even be more awesome because we love the draft experience too.
And from what I've heard, it's really fun.
Yeah.
So
I drafted it, you know, one time at Wizards 2 years ago, you know, and it was awesome, but I can't really give a definitive, like, is it as good as Conspiracy or Battle Bond or something like that?
Yeah.
But having said that, and I'm curious to hear if you agree, I don't really want them to do this again for a while.
The only reason I don't want them to is because of how long it took to make the first one, which means that they spent a lot of time. 2 years ago, you saw a lot of the cards that, right? And you saw how they changed a little bit.
Hole Breacher didn't exist when
I thought. That's a lot of time to really work and test and make sure. And a lot of it, I think, was based off of Gavin's passion purely. So, like, the same way that Mauro loves his unsets, Gavin must love his commander sets. So I think pushing him to do more of the same quality means you need to let it give it time to simmer.
Yeah, we talk about this in Hollywood a lot, how like the second movie or the second season of a successful show is almost always not as good as the original, because you got to realize they have usually 12, 15 years of working to just get somebody to give them the money to make the first movie or
and
the first season.
They've been thinking about it.
They've been thinking about it forever. Then it's successful and they're like, that show was so successful. You need to make season two. And also it needs to come out next fall. Go. And it's like, okay, yeah, the person's not necessarily a genius that created it. They just spent a long, long time thinking about it. And now they have 3 months
to
before they got
to recreate the magic.
Yeah, to do it again. And usually that's not sufficient. So I
Same goes for like bands and music and stuff too.
Yeah. So I like what you said there. I hope they don't try and push Commander Legends out, you know, again in 2022 or something, because I don't believe that the design will probably be as tight and as good. So they need to give it time to simmer. I also just think it wouldn't be healthy for Commander if every couple of years we have 70 new Legends and, you know, all these new cards designed for the format coming out in addition to the Commander product, which is already pushing a bunch of new stuff into the format. I think, you know, if we get this like once every 5 years,
I feel like my brain's filling up too. I don't know how I'm gonna remember. Like, people are gonna play cards and then more often than not now gonna be like, can you tell me what that does, please? Okay, so that's a good coverage of Commander Legends. I think we're both in general agreement. It was a success, and I think kudos to the design team as well as everyone that helped playtest this to get it to the state that it was in. It could have been really bad for the format. Think about that, right? It could have been awful.
Imagine if like there were four cards or even two cards in there that had to be banned.
Yeah, oh my gosh. I mean, look what happened to Standard this year, right?
Yeah.
The Uro and all that stuff, people were freaking out because they had to immediately get banned and the format was in chaos. Thank your stars that that did not happen with Commander Legends.
Yeah, good job, Gavin. Good job, Jules. Good job, everybody over there. I think, you know, definitely that was a hard bar to clear, but y'all did a good job. All right, let's talk about this year as a whole, the quality of the commanders that came out this year. You know, last year we had a lot of complaining to do about sort of generically good,
packed with value,
Tulane, Korvald, Yaruk, Urza, extremely powerful stuff with value, but commanders that we kind of are bored with, and we're bored with at the time because they were just so obviously good and powerful, and it's kind of easy to build.
Yeah, it's written on the card. It's like, wow, that's just a ton of value. Unfortunately, we didn't get too much of that this year because we got stuff like Obosh, Elena, which is like red ramp, Dargo, which has a really interesting synergy as well. And these are colors that...
Just naming all the red cards.
Yeah, I know all the red cards. But it was cool to see, like, these are lesser serviced colors, and they're opening new options and play styles for Commander. And I think that's an important area to explore, not just like, well, how much more value can we cram into a banned card?
Yeah, oh, another Simic card. They did do some of it, right? They had the Simic Precon. That's like, oh, another Simic card that just draws you cards for, like, sneezing. You know, oh, I picked my toe. I get to draw a card.
Draw
now.
A card, yeah, put a land on the battlefield. Yeah, cool, yeah. I'm doing the thing.
Yeah. I twiddled my fingers. I can draw a card now.
So let's talk about sort of the balance that was established this year for the most powerful new commanders, our favorites, and maybe some commanders that push the design space in a healthy way. So the most powerful new commander, it turns out Ikoria was filled with them. Because this is when we got Kinnan, Bonder Prodigy, Riel the Everwise, and Winota, Joiner of Forces.
All very strong.
All very strong. Now, I did like Riel because I think that is like a really cool place to play in. And it opens up a bunch of old cards that weren't good and now are good.
But it's also just really good with wheels.
Yep, really good with wheels. And then Kinnan, both of us were like, wow, why does this need to exist? It's just generically...
Yeah, that's in the Tulane mold, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Uro, Titan of Nature's Wrath, which was from Theros. Obviously a very powerful card in all formats, but a very powerful commander.
Yep. Omnath, Locus of Creation, the four-color version, which probably means we're getting the five-color version soon, right?
Probably.
This card, again, it's one of those cards that feels like a Tulane a little bit. It's got it all on the card.
Yep.
Landfall, do a bunch of stuff.
You put Muxus, Goblin Grandee. I got to admit, I haven't seen this deck in action. Is it very, very powerful?
Yeah, so I'm actually putting it on here not because of Commander so much, because I know it will be good in Commander because there's lots. Right now you have access to your Mana Crypts and so many other cards. But in Historic, the Muxus deck just absolutely wipes the table with people.
Really?
Yeah, it can turn three or four, just kill someone, instant single hit. So Muxus has a really powerful ability, and there's so many Goblin cards that can enable it. I think it is just one of the more powerful ways to build a Goblin deck.
Amarith, the Lustrous from Commander Legends. We talked about Kodama of the East Tree. We talked about a bunch of combos when we did the set review for that. So most powerful commander, I'm just going to run down the list here and then we can say what we think actually is the most powerful commander from this year. It's Kinnan, Bonder Prodigy, Riel the Everwise, Winota, Joiner of Forces, Uro, Titan of Nature's Wrath, Omnath, Locus of Creation, Muxus, Goblin Grandee, Amarith, the Lustrous, and Kodama of the East Tree. Jimmy, do you know which you think is the most powerful?
I kind of want to say Riel because it has so much play and there's so many blue-red decks that are already doing what Riel does and she just powers it up super hard. And I think both of those colors are pretty viable in Commander these days. Otherwise, I would just say, I don't know, any of the Simic ones.
Yeah, Kinnan is who I'm going to say just because that deck can go off super fast, super early because it gets so much mana so fast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Doesn't surprise me that blue's in both of them and that the probably the more powerful one is the one with green.
All right, let's talk about our favorite new commanders, though, because that often doesn't line up with what is the most powerful. In fact, we made a list here, and none of the most powerful commanders that we just talked about are on this list.
Because we built those decks, you know? When's the last time you played your little Mizzix of Ismagnus deck, you know?
I haven't played it in probably over a year. I've got to take it apart. I need that Force of Will back. So our favorite new commanders, I put two on the list. Obeka, Brute Chronologist, and Obosh, the Prey Piercer. Those were my two favorite decks that I built this year.
This is the year that Josh Lee Kwai, I think, transformed into a red player, to be honest.
I tried. A lot of Rakdos, for sure.
Yeah, a lot of Rakdos. I mean, that was kind of like me the year before. I've done a lot of Rakdos as well. I love both those cards. Obeka's got great design, being able to end the turn. If anyone's seen the extra turns, Josh has one or two turns in that game that are just like... I guess more than that, because you're taking extra turns at the same
time. For only two mana.
Yeah, really fun to see. I put down three. One is Sakashima of 1,000 Faces. And then I also put down Gen, Arcanum Weaver. And then Paco and Haldan, the pairing, where you play Fetch.
I would say Paco and Haldan is a very powerful combo, too. I think in CDH that's doing some stuff. So
yeah, it's really fun.
You did a budget version, though.
Yeah, I did a budget version. And that's why I really like the deck, too, is you get to play with other people's stuff. People don't always love that. But when you're playing cards that are like 50 cents or 10 cents and you're beating people with their decks, it feels great.
It's hard to complain that your deck's too powerful if it's using my cards against me.
Yeah.
Because like if I can't defeat the cards in my own deck, then it's my own deck that's too powerful, right?
Maybe. Yeah.
Maybe.
And then I really like Gen, Arcanum Weaver because it gives Mardu an option that isn't just beat face. Because, you know, with Jarena Kudro, it's like, hey, do you want to attack? And it's like, no. So Gen kind of gets around that, which is cool.
And then there were a bunch of commanders from Jumpstart that we haven't talked about at all yet. Commanders that push the design space, you know, in an interesting way. You put it in a healthy way.
Yeah, I think that's the important thing here because the cards we talked about before, you know, your Moldrothas and all those like just value-packed engine cards. Korvold makes you take a 20-minute turn.
Right.
These aren't cards that necessarily do that. These are cards that open up new places to play in. And I put Bruvac the Grandiloquent. I know people are like, what? Mill pushes the format in a healthy way? I'd say yes, because Mill hasn't been like a really viable thing in Commander. And it's its own double-edged sword. If you mill someone out that is a dredge deck or has a lot of graveyard synergies,
you're Eldrazi.
Yeah, you're in danger. But it's cool that they made a commander and they changed the keyword as well to say mill now.
Yeah, that is cool.
I liked Ineaz the Gale Force too, because it's kind of got this cool like switching creatures and passing stuff around the table. It forces interactivity. So I thought Jumpstart had a lot of interesting things in there. Emile the Blessed was another. It's a white-green flicker deck too. And I think that sort of stuff, it has cool value in it. You can do cool things in Magic. And it isn't just like... ugh, here he goes. He's got 60 lands on the table and, well, right, not 60. He's got every land on the table. He's drawing so many cards. We can't keep up with the value engine.
Yeah, if I couldn't kill that commander when it hit the table the very first time, I had no chance to stop it.
Yeah.
All right. So, well, I mean, in theory, I like all that those things you said, but I never really got to see many Jumpstart cards in the wild because nobody has it.
There's the rub.
Yeah. Okay. Overall, though, what did we think about the new commanders, the way they designed, you know, the stuff that we could put in our command zone this year? Or sorry, last year, 2020.
One thumbs up? No, let's give them two thumbs up.
I think they did a really good job this year, and they hit a pretty nice sweet spot. I mean, last year was kind of like not great, let's be honest.
It's like, please, less powerful, please.
Please, less easy, too. Like, yeah, push us in some directions that we haven't been in before. Stop making cards that say, like, hey, every time you play a land, do everything, you know? Like, every time you play a creature, do everything, because it's just too easy. Yeah. I get it. New players may like that, but it just when they're that powerful, it kind of feels boring. Because how can my crazy contraption that's trying to play, you know, trying to like control the order of the attacking in the game, like really keep up with that?
I think my only real complaint is that Boros, they just kind of shoehorned it into you love equipment, don't you? Well, now you can attack and draw some cards with it now. It's like, but I have to play equipment and that's like 10, 13 cards in my deck.
Yeah, and somebody just one removal spell, my whole game's over.
Yeah, slows me down quite a bit.
All right. We are going to take a quick break to hear a message from our sponsors. But when we come back, we are going to talk about one of the biggest subjects every year that people are talking about, and that is reprints. How were the reprints in 2020? Did they give us what they promised? We're going to find out in just a minute.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's Angi.com.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
All right, we are back. It is the Commander 2021 retrospective year in review. Was the year of Commander good or not?
We got to work on our names.
Yeah, it might not be the most clickbait time we've ever made. So this is the big one, reprints. This is always something that's on players' minds. It was one of the big 3 points that Gavin made in his sort of introduction to the year of Commander. Josh is trying to find the paper. I threw it really far away. I got the quote.
So here it is. I think many of you will be happy with the reprints coming throughout 2020. That's a direct quote from Gavin in his article.
Okay.
So let's find out. Were we happy with the reprints in 2020?
Yep. Players need reprints. Do we hit that mark? So let's start off with the biggest reprints of the year. However, caveat, we're going to be excluding the Mystery Booster from this. It was a 1,700 card set. Jumpstart, just because of sheer unavailability, and any like Masterpiece or Expedition or Box Toppers, because one, those don't really change the prices. And for Mystery Booster, we're going to cover that actually much more in depth in a second.
I don't think it's fair for them to be like, yeah, we reprinted the Fetchlands as Masterpieces. Yeah, that's not really what we're talking about when we ask for a reprint of the Fetchlands. So, okay. Some big ones. You want to go down the list?
Yeah. First up, Vampiric Tutor, obviously.
Always spendy.
Anytime there's a tutor card, especially if it's instant speed, very, very powerful. And one mana, too. Jeez.
Three visits, which you pointed out was one of the most expensive non-reserveless cards in existence before this reprint.
Yeah, it was in the hundreds. Now it is an uncommon in a big set, so thank goodness. I don't know if green needs another ramp card, but at least it's available now for people to use.
Yep. Mana Drain was the next one, a very expensive counterspell.
Yep. Ugin, the Spirit Dragon, reprinted in M21.
Yep.
Just a huge monster, 8 mana, wonderful board wipe, just solid card.
One of the best planeswalkers in the format. Grim Tutor was also in M21. This was a card that was just impossible to get a hold of.
Similar to Three Visits in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Arcane Signet. It's easy to forget, but at the end of 2019, Arcane Signet was still pretty expensive because they'd only really put it in the Brawl decks, and people were mad about that. This year, they were like, listen, we're just going to put Arcane Signet in everything.
Yep.
And now it's definitely down to a much lower price point. Do you remember when that card was like $15?
Yeah, unfortunately. And I know that, being a mono red player, you need as many of those 2 mana rocks as possible. And now you're looking at these $15 cards, you're like, darn. But fortunately, they reprinted it like 3, 4, 5 times this year. It was in all of the pre-cons, all of the mini Commander decks. I got you. as well as Commander Legends.
Azusa, Lost But Seeking, was reprinted this year.
Yeah, very nice. Scroll Rack was reprinted. And
this card was up to like $70 or something.
I think they could reprint this card all the time, please. It's just a great card. I don't think it takes that much time off the table. And it's starting to become really relevant with a lot of commanders and stuff out there, too.
Commander Legends also had Rings of Brighthearth and Staff of Domination.
A GLK favorite.
Yep. And then Double Masters, we're going to put in its own category here, because remember, Double Masters packs were expensive. It was like $10 for the pack or something. Because you got two rares and their master sets are always more spendy. But these still are cards that were reprinted in pretty high numbers because there was a decent amount of double masters out there. Mm-hmm. So Mana Crypt was printed in double masters. It was also printed in mystery boosters. We're going to address that in a second.
Force of Will, one of the most powerful counter spells in Legacy as well as our format.
Sword of Feast and Famine.
The best sword.
That can legitimately go in almost any commander deck.
Yeah, no kidding. And then Doubling Season, another really spendy card, but just a staple for any of those go big Planeswalker decks or counter decks.
And there were a number of reprints that were sort of a little bit lower down, like Idyllic Tutor and things like that. There was a whole bunch throughout the year, but those are the major ones that came out last year, the really big ticket items.
Okay. Those are the biggest reprints of the year. Not bad. A lot of cards here. Like, Three Visits really surprised me. Grim Tutor surprised me as well. So it was cool to see that.
I'm glad besides the Mystery Booster stuff, which we're going to talk about in a minute. Yeah.
Okay.
Let's talk about reprints we still need.
Yeah.
Reprints we did not get this year.
And keep in mind, Wizards, I'm assuming, is designing these, like they've said, 2 years sometimes in advance, so they may not have anticipated everything. But I'm pretty sure we talked about this first card starting on, I don't know, day three of our podcast.
Vedalken Orrery did not get reprinted in 2020, which I think is a travesty. It's been expensive for a long time, and people always yell at me now when I mention it because they think that every time I mention it, it's like
getting
more expensive. I think it's... Listen... The card is not expensive because I'm talking about it. The card is expensive because it's good, and there aren't very many of them out there.
Yeah, and yeah, we get it. 4-mana, do-nothing artifact. Not every playgroup is going to balk at that, right? A lot of the more casual playgroups, Vedalken Orrery ends up being a really powerful card.
If it's not CEDH, Vedalken Orrery is awesome. If it is CEDH, well, you know, all bets are off.
Wayfarer's Bauble, another card that is really, really freaking important to any monocolor deck that doesn't have green in it because just need more ways to ramp.
Yep. Oh, dual color decks without green. Any deck without green wants Wayfarer's Bauble. Yeah, that's a card that didn't get reprinted this year. Not really. Not a real reprint. Cabal Coffers is getting to be an expensive card again. That's something that hasn't been reprinted or wasn't reprinted last year. Urborg, which goes along with Cabal Coffers.
Yeah, and that was reprinted the year before, but it's just doubled in price, if not more. It's a really good land, obviously.
Because if you think about it, any deck with black could think about running. I run in a lot of decks that have black. Cabal Coffers, Urborg, and Expedition Map. Just that package, because you also have Demonic Tutor and maybe Vampiric Tutor, so you have multiple ways to find all those pieces.
Yeah, and it's a great way to ramp, especially among the black decks. Parallel Lives kind of goes alongside Anointed Procession, just more of these token doublers. Parallel Lives used to be a really, really cheap card, and then, you know...
You realize Innistrad was 9 years ago now.
Yeah, and so it's one of those situations where it just hasn't seen enough print runs, and now is just climbing up.
Edgar Markov is a commander that is starting to edge up there in price, probably needs a reprint.
Yep. And I would say maybe the strongest of that.
I think so.
Sure. And then we have Mystic Remora, which is, you know, if we're not going to get Rhystic Study, that at least give us the Remora, please.
Remora in a lot of ways can be better than Rhystic Study, especially in the more spiky playgroups because it just costs less mana.
Yeah.
Mirari's Wake is a card that got reprinted in a Commander product a couple years ago, but it's just the type of card that's just always climbing up over time, and now it's over $20 again. They need to reprint that soon.
The biggest one. Fetch lands.
Yeah.
I get it. You don't want to put them in standard, but you just released a year of product with like 50 other things in it. We got to find a better place for them than these like very exclusive and expensive secret lairs. Please.
Or masterpieces. Like that obviously doesn't... When people say they want reprints, it's because what they're really saying is, I want this card to be cheaper.
Yeah. Or to exist on a place where I can get it on the Card Kingdom or wherever, where it's not going to cost me, you know, five other cards just for this one. And it's a land. It doesn't actually feel like it does that much in my deck either.
But it feels like I need it, right? To run certain decks as efficiently as other people are running them. When we first started the podcast, Cons of Tarkir had just come out. That's the last time we really got a huge influx of fetch lands. Yeah, they did reprint the other fetch lands, the Scalding Tarns and whatnot, in a Masters product, but that didn't push enough into the market to really bring those prices down for very long at all.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they obviously know everybody wants them and they're not doing it on purpose, and maybe they're saving it because they know whenever they pull it out, they will sell that product.
They will sell that set.
But man, those things are just creeping up more and more. We need to get them reprinted again for sure.
It feels bad too because we were just on the land set. Yeah. Zendikar, and I was like, this could be a time. It didn't happen.
One thing we noticed is that the allied colored talismans...
This surprised me.
Yeah, they are all starting to creep up. The ones that don't have green in them. Because in a green deck, you don't need it. You run the Ramp Progress and Three Visits and whatnot. But in the non-green ones, you need them, and a lot of the non-green ones are inching up over $5 now. So I think all those talismans, the allied colored ones, need to be reprinted fairly soon.
Another card that has been reprinted a bunch of times, but is now inching over $5, is very similar to Arcane Signet. It is Felwar Stone.
Yep.
This definitely has, you know, again, it's just a 2-mana rock that a lot of decks want. And so I think this is another card that you could reasonably start putting into the mini commander decks, the commander precons, without even blinking an eye, and it's not going to hurt anyone.
Yep. And then Sensei's Divining Top is a card that can be a little annoying to play against, but at the same time, it's very, very good in Commander. And they haven't reprinted this thing since, I think, Eternal Masters.
Yeah.
When it went down for a long time into like the $13 range, but it's way up again. They need to reprint this thing again because it is a card a lot of decks want, and right now it's just too expensive.
Okay, moving on. Cards that were printed recently but already needs a reprint. And I'm going to quote again Gavin here. He said in that article regarding reprints, quote, "Not just of older cards that have never been reprinted, but even of ones that have been reprinted recently."
Okay, so there are, we're just going to talk about, what, 6 cards here.
Yeah.
They came out within the last, they like came out for the first time within the last couple of years, but we already know you better reprint this thing faster or they're going to be $100.
Yeah.
So Smothering Tithe, that thing is already super expensive. Just came out last year. They got to reprint it next year, I think. Yeah. Otherwise, it's going to get hard to reprint.
Dockside Extortionist.
Oh, boy.
A mono red, just, it obviously sees a lot of CEDH play, but only came out in a precon as a one of in one of the decks. And that is not as effective as putting it into a booster pack somewhere.
It could have been in Commander Legends. Easily.
Yeah, oh, right? 100%.
Yeah. Veil of Summer. This is an uncommon from a core set, but just goes in so many green decks that it's starting to inch up, I think, over $10 or so now.
Yeah. Fierce Guardianship.
These that was next from three this
kind of,
year.
Yeah, these kind of all go together. These are the cast it if you have your mana, your commander out for free.
Fierce Guardianship is the counter spell. Deflecting Swat is the red redirect spell. And then Deadly Rollick is the black...
Kill something.
Exile a creature spell, right?
Yeah.
So Fierce Guardianship is like, what, $35 already? Just came out like 6 months ago.
I feel like Wizards should at least know.
7.
And maybe they do that. Anytime you put cast this for free on a card and it has a relevant ability, that thing is going to be very sought after because you do have a growing amount of players now that Commander is bigger than ever, even bigger CEDH group. And those, you know, and we've seen it with Legacy, that will push prices up the more players want it or need it to be competitive in the format.
Yeah, Fierce Guardianship and Deflecting Swat. Those two specifically, they got to reprint those soon.
Yeah.
They got up to above $20 so fast. Like, it felt like the set came out, and a month later, those things were above $20.
Speaking of commons, what is that? Was that uncommon, the pirate that gives you a treasure every time a creature dies?
Pitiless Plunderer?
Yeah, Pitiless Plunderer. Another uncommon that just shot up, and that card came out pretty recently, too.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about some cards that were technically reprinted in 2020, but are still in high demand and still need reprints. So Rhystic Study and Teferi's Protection were quote-unquote reprinted in the Mystery Booster product, and Rhystic Study, I think actually both are in Jumpstart.
Yeah.
But the price on them changed. I think Jumpstart is, like, the reprint in Jumpstart means nothing for any card that was reprinted in Jumpstart for two reasons. One, not very much Jumpstart got made, but two... The Jumpstart reprints are kind of like smoke and mirrors. The way that they work is like Rhystic Study was in one of the 140 possible packs you could get. So it was basically the same rarity as like an Expedition or something. Craterhoof is the same way. It feels like, hey, Craterhoof's in the set. That's a good reprint. Yeah, but it's only in one out of 140 packs. So you're just not going to open it almost ever.
Yep. Oracle of Moldiah as well. This is a big one. Thrasios. I mean, you just released all of these new partner pairings and they had this etched foil thing for Commander. But again, that's a very similar thing. It's like a kind of an exclusive. You can't get it off in cards. So it's not going to move the market up or down. And then the other major partner commanders, Timna, and Kana, all these cards are very, very highly played. And I was just like so disappointed that how did they not find a way to reprint these with Commander Legends coming out?
Yeah, with all the other partners that could suddenly go with them. Yeah, especially Thrasios, I think, is the most expensive because Thrasios is the one of those that even if it's not your commander, it goes in your deck.
Yeah.
If you're in blue-green. Because it's just such a good payoff and sort of a safety valve for if I have a ton of mana and nothing else to do.
Yep.
That, like, if you're playing a deck that has those colors, Thrasios goes in. Whereas if you're playing Rakdos colors, you don't always put Vile Smasher inside the deck, right?
Yeah.
So Thrasios just is a high-demand card that all by itself could stand to see a reprint.
Yeah, literally by itself, that commander is one of the most powerful commanders ever.
Yeah.
Just by, without even a partner.
Yep. All right, let's talk about Mystery Boosters. We teased it earlier. We wanted to take a look at Mystery Boosters because they're a very unique thing. There were 1,700 cards in the set. So anything that got reprinted didn't necessarily come into the market in the same numbers that would come in a normal set where there's 300 cards. And the way that rarity worked in Mystery Boosters was really, really weird. So I think actually Wizards played with sort of seeing how messaging and reprinting would work in sets where the cards aren't actually reprinted at the same amount as if they were in a standard thing. So like the Crater.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Right. So you get to say, oh, Crater Hoof is reprinted in Jumpstart, right? And it looks cool because it's like, yeah, it's there and it's in the set, but nobody really delved down real deep and said, well, how
easy is it to open this thing?
Yeah. Oh, it's as easy as a Masterpiece was from, you know, the old days or an Expedition or something. That's very rare. So the Crater Hoof, if you look at the price, it didn't change at all because of Jumpstart, because basically, yes, technically it's reprinted in that set, but not enough of them exist actually there to change the price at all.
If you're a retailer, what you're doing is you're cracking open tons and tons of these packs. You're not going there and being like, this is the same as a Mythic Rare. I'm going to get a guaranteed maybe X number per case or whatever.
Right.
It's a much lower chance for those.
Yep.
And of course, Jumpstart wasn't printed very often, and it's hard to get now. So I think Jumpstart kind of, again, it's negligible, anything that was reprinted in there.
But Mystery Boosters did affect some prices.
Mm-hmm.
For some things like Rhystic Study and things like that, it maybe didn't. But we're going to go through, because you kind of did a deep dive.
Yeah, I did a deep dive.
We got like all these graphs on our...
I went to MTG Goldfish, and they allow you to see a price track over time.
Yeah.
So the important start date for this was March 2020, when the Mystery Boosters became available. So we're going to quickly go through, I think, 10 cards. And a lot of these were these sort of like top reprints from Mystery Booster to see if it actually had an effect on the card. So
like the price of the start versus the price now, and just see, did it go down?
Yeah, and if it got reprinted in the middle or before then, what does the original price look like? So the first one was Mana Crypt. It sat at around $150 when Jumpstart first came out. And then it actually started trending downwards, and it's still expensive, but we're now around 100 or so. But then for this one, you actually have to zoom out, because Mana Crypt has been trending downwards for quite a while. It was around $230 in June of 2019. Wow. And it's been reprinted a bunch of times, but there has never been what I would call the like a cause and effect dip, where as soon as something gets reprinted, it drops, which you'll see with a lot of major normal sets that weren't Mystery Boosters. So that one's interesting. I don't know if the Mystery Boosters impacted it trending downwards, but it's been trending for a while now. This may have helped usher it maybe just a little bit in that direction.
And it did get reprinted again in Double Masters. So it had a double reprint this year. And
but the Double Masters reprint didn't do the thing where it dropped it. It kind of kept it steady, because I think people were seeing it go down slowly, and it wasn't one of those like, well, let's just chop $50 off the price tag or whatever.
Interesting.
Bloom Tender. Now, this one had a huge drop in price. The original release was an Eventide, which I don't even know how many years ago. And it was around like $50, $60.
Wait, it was a $50, $60 before this Mystery Booster reprint?
Yeah, before the Mystery Booster reprint. And as soon as the Mystery Booster reprint hit, boom, the Mystery Booster version of it was around like $25 and stayed around that and kept steady. And then the Eventide version slowly crept down. But because Eventide is such an old set, the card's still worth a lot because it's just harder to get. But that's huge. Bloom
Tender. You can get a Bloom Tender now for like a little over $20.
Yeah, $20-ish, $25-ish, maybe climbing back up. But it immediately dropped the moment that Mystery Boosters dropped as well.
So that seems like Mystery Boosters did affect the price and definitely bring it down.
Expropriate is the next one. It started around $40, a little bit above it, and this one also dropped in price, and now this actually sits around like $17, $20, so that's like half of it, and you can see it happen the moment that Mystery Boosters came out. So again, it started at $30 and then just trended downwards until now.
That makes sense to me, because Expropriate is not the type of card that you want seven or eight of in your collection, right?
Yeah, it's like, it's a nine mana win the game type card.
And once you do it a couple times, you realize like, I don't actually want Expropriate in all my decks that have blue in it. It's not, you know, so once you own one or two, you're kind of good. So I can see how it could be like, I don't have that card, I want it, so it's $40. Then enough come in Mystery Booster is like, I have it, I don't need any more.
Yeah.
It's not Cyclonic Rift where it's like, listen, I need 12 of those because I need one for every deck.
Every deck, yeah. And it's not like this next card, which is just like that. It's Teferi's Protection.
Oh, interesting.
This one is a really interesting graph because, again, it's only been printed twice. Once originally in the Commander sets and then in the Mystery Boosters. It was starting around 40, and then when it came out in the Mystery Boosters, it was a bit lower, 35-ish. But then it just equalized out, and it's the same price as it was before.
Basically, no price change from the Mystery Boosters. Because all those Teferi Protections that came out into the market, people just bought them and put them into their deck.
Yep, and they were
the same demand as there was before.
Same demand as there was before. Clearly, the Mystery Booster wasn't able to. And this is a card, again, that's ubiquitous. You can put it in any of your decks, whereas Bloom Tender does not go in every deck.
Yeah, I think that's indicative of the fact that Mystery Boosters didn't put enough copies of anything in the market to really depress the price on anything that was super high demand.
Super high demand, yeah. So let's look at another card that is a CEDH staple now, Savala, Heart of the Wilds. So there are three printings of this, Jumpstart, the original, and then Mystery Booster. It was around $60, and now it has dropped significantly.
Yeah, now it's just, like, below 10 if you want, like, a cheap copy of it, right?
Yeah, I think it's actually around 1820, so it might be a little higher, but it was a clear downward trend the moment that got printed in Mystery Boosters, and then when it came out in Jumpstart, the Jumpstart price of the card was also around the same, so they couldn't, like, you know...
Oh, yeah, I'm looking at the wrong graph. You're right. It's, like, 21. Yeah.
So, and then Jumpstart came in around here.
Mm-hmm.
So, actually, it's nice. It's good to see that, you know, it was just because I think the card was only printed once, but it's a commander. You don't need a bunch of them. If you need one, you just need one.
Yeah, that's what I think, too. It's more like Bloom Tender than it is like Teferi's Protection, right?
Same story goes for the next one. It's Sakashima the Imposter. It was around $35. And then the Mystery Booster price put it around like $15. And then it's just sort of gone down since then as well.
Reach the Redeemed, we see a very similar thing, right? Where it comes out, it's like at $30. And now you can find it for around...
$10. Because when the Mystery Booster version came out, they priced it around $12. And that just sort of stayed around there.
Yep.
And then Demonic Tutor, this one started around $25. It's been reprinted a bunch. It rose in price.
It's more like Teferi's Protection, right?
Yep.
Where it's like every Demonic Tutor that comes out, it gets put into a deck. People aren't like, oh no, I got too many Demonic Tutors. Nobody's ever said that. Yeah, I don't even have enough. I have decks with black in them, don't have Demonic Tutors because I only have a certain amount, right?
Yeah, and the same goes for Purphoros, God of the Forge. This one started around 23-ish, and then, again, it was the only time it had been printed outside of, obviously, the Secret Lairs. It just trended downwards, and it's now down to, like, 14, 15 now.
All right, let's talk about Heuristic Study, which started this whole discussion.
Okay, let's see if you can guess out there, based on the trends we've seen, Heuristic Study started around $25.
What do you think it costs now?
Turns out, it's more.
Yeah, slightly more or
slightly
at least
more,
the very
yeah, or
same.
About the same, yeah. Yeah.
It started at 25 and now it's about 26, 27.
Yeah, it may continue to climb as well because this is, again, a ubiquitous card. You play it in every blue deck if you want that amazing card draw engine in there.
Yeah, I think Mystery Boosters, and it was reprinted in one of the decks in Jumpstart too.
Yeah.
They just don't really put enough cards into circulation that it's going to change the price of these real staple cards.
Yeah, so it seems like I think the Mystery Boosters in general, publicly being available outside of the conventions, is a good thing. The prices of cards have been significantly reduced of the ones that we talked about. Like, Reese the Redeemed had no right being that expensive.
Right.
And it was great to see it now because it's a really popular one-drop commander that does a lot of cool tokeny things. But Mana Crypt has been going down for a while, and it didn't seem like it affected that because, again, it's just a very high-value card. Same with Demonic Tutor and Heuristic Study. So,
Teferi's Protection.
Yeah, Teferi's Protection. So I think the takeaway is that the cards that are most affected by a Mystery Booster-type reprint are those that have only seen one version in the past. So it's an artificial demand for it almost, which is like, it's only been existed once. Maybe it'll never exist again. Now it's $30. But the moment that it comes out, I think people realize, actually, it's not that in demand. So it's not; it doesn't deserve that price tag. It's actually closer to like 15 or whatever, and so that's great.
Yeah, I think
that sort
of
equalizing is awesome.
There's kind of two reasons that a card is expensive, if you take the reserve lift and stuff out of it.
Yeah,
one is that there aren't very many copies of that card that are in existence,
mm-hmm.
and the other is that that card goes in every deck.
Yep.
And when it goes in every deck, you need to put a lot of them into circulation to change the price at all. But when it's just only high price because not a lot of them were ever made, you don't actually need to put as many into the market to start lowering that price because the demand for that card is actually not that high. Mm-hmm. It's just that there aren't very many of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think we have to be wary, though, in the future of things like Mystery Boosters and Jumpstart and like looking at the list and just saying like, oh, they're reprinting this card. Reprints are good. This is a good reprint. How many of those cards are actually coming into?
Yeah.
If it's in Ikoria, there's a lot more coming in than if it's in something like Mystery Boosters where it's one of 1,700 cards rather than one of 300.
Yep.
And the rarities they played with or one Jumpstart pack versus, you know. Yeah. So
there's more than meets the eye for these specific kinds of sets. Still really hoping to see a lot of Jumpstart get reprinted. But again, I don't think cards like Craterhoof that goes in a ton of decks are going to be significantly affected because, again, there's just so many different decks. The chances of getting a bunch of those out there is pretty low.
All right. So overall, though, what do we think about the reprints in 2020? You know, we're pretty far past the discussion because of the Mystery Boosters, but there was a lot of high-profile reprints at the start that we talked about that they did reprint this year. And then Mystery Boosters did reprint a whole bunch of stuff. How do you feel about the quality of reprints? Do you think it lived up to Gavin's statement?
I think so. Especially because of the cards like Reese and Sakashima and Silvala, the ones that just had no right being at the price that they were at. And I think it's good to know that, right? I hope Wizards is taking the same message away. I wish we saw Thrasios in Mystery Boosters. Yeah. That would be a perfect place to do it. But I get that they had constraints of sets and all that stuff. But I think in general, they did a good job. They did a lot of experimenting, and I hope they do what's best for the player based off that experimentation.
Yeah, I agree. We can be pretty happy with the reprints that came in 2020. Is it perfect? Is it everything? No, it's not. Vidalcan Ori, hello. But I think they did
a
good job.
Flash it in on December 31st. They'd be like, you never knew it. Boom.
There is still technically time. Because
when we're recording this.
We're recording this. It's not quite the end of the year. They'll flash it in.
They'll have another one out. You're like,
they'll
why
be like, flavor.
Whoa.
That would be the coolest thing ever. Gavin, please make that
happen.
Please
make that happen.
I don't know.
The
you're
remaining...
in the time machine, though.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And know that we're recording this and have 8 days to do it from now. So, good job.
Yeah, I think they did a good job. But clearly, there's still a lot of reprinting that's going to have to happen. And as long as they keep making Fierce Guardianships and Deflecting Swats, they're making more cards, Dockside Extortionists, that need to be reprinted right away because they're in such high demand. So
More mystery boosters for maybe less cards total. I don't think we need 1,700. And let's throw in some of those Deflecting Swats and Fierce Guardianships and the Rhystic Studies in there. More, please.
Yep.
It doesn't hurt anyone. It's just, I mean, look, we want more in the market, please.
Okay. Let's talk about the new cards this year that were designed specifically for Commander. Now, in most years, that's only the cards that come in the Commander product. But this year, we've got the mini Commander decks and we've got Commander Legends.
Yep.
So let's run down quickly how we think this year went as far as new card design that's not Commanders, right? We already talked about new Commanders.
Yeah. And so we sort of like went through each set and listed powerful slash cool cards that were non the Commanders. So the ones that can go in the 99.
This is fun. We can do what we think is the most powerful new non-Commander card from this year. But first, let's talk about what the nominees are.
Yeah. So in Theros Beyond Death, we had Thassa's Oracle.
That one's going to be tough to beat.
As well as Underworld Breach. In Ikoria, it turns out this is actually a little harder because the commanders are so good, but the card quality wasn't as great. And Mutate, I think it hasn't been a major hit, I think.
Yeah.
There was a Luminous Broodmoth. There was also the Ozolith, which is a lot of fun. In C20, we just wrote Fierce Guardianship, but you could also put down Deflecting Swat.
A Fierce Guardianship is clearly the most powerful card from that set. Yeah.
Zendikar Rising, I did a little fun thing. I just wrote Modal DFCs because I think this as a whole might be the single most best thing that Commander players have gotten in a while.
It's pretty sweet.
And then Lethal Form Engine as well.
Lethal Form Engine has been great.
Yep.
We've been seeing it a lot in our games.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
Jumpstart had Scholar of the Lost Trove, which I played in the last game, or two game nights ago. Branching Evolution, and then Allosaurus Shepherd also was like a one drop that has just exploded in price, unfortunately.
I put Allosaurus Shepherd question mark because I gotta be honest, I've never actually seen it in play yet. I picked it as the most powerful card from that set.
That's funny.
But Jumpstart has been so, like, I just haven't seen those cards in play very much, and we don't play CEDH, which is where that card's more likely to show up.
Yeah.
But I'm still assuming it's good, but I just haven't seen it yet.
Yep.
Full disclosure.
M21 brought us to Teferi, Master of Time. Turns out he really is mastering time and turn cycles.
We were right about that card. That card's really good.
It's nuts, yeah. And then Fiery Emancipation. And then Commander Legends, we know the big three, Jewel of the Soul Breacher, Opposition Agent. And of course, Jeska's Will has to be on that list because the card is totally sick. There are a lot of cards we left off here, by the way. Nyx Bloom Ancient is one that could have been on there. So we're just sort of taking smaller selections here. If you disagree, let us know in the comments.
I mean, I think we're down to like Thassa's Oracle.
Yeah.
And then
Fierce Guardianship.
Hole Breacher and Jeska's Will. Those are my three top cards from the year. Fierce Guardianship. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
So the top four, I would say Thassa's Oracle, Fierce Guardianship, Hole Breacher. Shoot. Three of them are mono blue. And Jeska's
Man.
Will. I mean, Underworld Breach is really good, so maybe it does belong on there.
But I think it takes a little more work to make it work. Jeska's Will, just, I think, relative to what Mono Red has gotten in the past, is, to me, that's the winner. But I still think a Fierce Guardianship might be more powerful.
Powerful is hard to determine because there's two ways to determine it, right? What is, are you counting the most powerful when the card's at its most powerful?
Right.
Or because then I think Thassa's Oracle wins. Are you counting the card at its average power or like how many decks it goes into? Because Thassa's Oracle doesn't go into every deck, whereas Jeska's Will kind of does. So, yeah. What did you say was yours?
I would say Jeska's Will just because I love red and it's such a big, cool card for that.
I think I agree with you. It's Fierce Guardianship or Jeska's Will for me. Those are the two blue cards that legitimately can go, or sorry, not blue cards, two new cards that can legitimately go in every deck that has that color.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not a big ask to have your commander on the battlefield. That's just the thing most decks are trying to do.
Yeah.
But a lot of good cards this year. Jessica's Will. It's so good. It's going in every deck. Pick up, like, seriously, everybody out there, pick up like 5 or 6 of them. You're going to want.
Yeah, they're just great.
By next year, you're going to be like, man, I wish I had more Jessica's Wills.
Man, I wish they reprinted it more. It was just printed.
It's going to be on our need to reprint list very soon.
It already is, by the way. I'll just say it, put it there. Okay.
Okay, but let's talk about our favorite new cards, non-commanders from this year. Let's run down the nominees here, Jimmy.
Okay.
Some are the same as the most powerful, but not all of them.
The first is one that Josh and I are both just, we just love it. It's Balaged Recovery, and on the flip side, it's Balaged Sanctuary.
So it's the modal double-face card that's a land and a regrowth spell. This thing goes in every green deck now.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yep.
And it replaces a land slot, too, by the way.
It's so good.
Keeper of the Accord. It's Mono White's version of getting more creatures on the battlefield and lands on the battlefield as a 4-mana card.
I know a lot of people were iffy about this. I've seen it in play a number of times now. It's always good.
Yeah. Felidar Retreat, I put this one in there just because of Game Nights. I didn't realize just how powerful this is, especially with so many landfall things now around.
This card is a machine unto itself. It synergizes with self, right? Like,
yeah,
you make a bunch of creatures and then you start pumping those creatures. Or if you already have a lot of creatures, you just pump them. But it works with itself. It just can do a lot of powerful things.
Oh, I didn't realize you put this on here, but it is a great new card for Commander. It's Feed the Swarm, Mono Black's way to destroy an enchantment.
That's another black card that's going in most of the black decks. Now, you don't have to put it in maybe if you're already like black green, because green does have ways to destroy enchantments, or blue, but man, black red, black blue, some combination thereof. Grixis, this card is really, really good. Being able to destroy an enchantment for cheap too,
and black, yeah. Yep. And it can kill a creature too if you can't get an enchantment.
Yeah that's true.
Thieving Skydiver, the one in the blue, take your soul ring, or whatever.
Kicker, take their best artifact.
Yeah, pretty good.
And plus you can like bounce it back to your hand and stuff. Yeah, Thieving Skydiver is real good.
Teferi, Master of Time, once again, activate them on every turn, keep on looting. Jessica's Will, gotta love it. Deflecting Swat, the red version of the Fierce Guardianship cycle.
Yeah, Fierce Guardianship is just more powerful than Deflecting Swat.
Yeah.
Deflecting Swat is just way cooler than Fierce Guardianship, right?
Yeah, Deflecting Swat, it's more niche, right? Fierce Guardianship counters a lot of things. Deflecting Swat sometimes just won't work depending on the spell that the person casts.
Yeah, if they cast a board wipe, you can't do anything about it. But yeah, man, it leads to some blowouts where it's just like, oh, crap.
Uh-oh. And then two mono red cards to fill out the rest here. It's Morag, Fury of Akum, the bunch of attack triggers guys with landfall. And then Hellkite Courser, the big dragon that brings out your commander for a turn.
Yeah, sneak attacks your commander.
Sneak attacks it out,
from
yeah.
The command zone, yeah. A lot of cool stuff here. I will note that there's only one green card on this list.
Ah, yeah.
Only two white cards on our favorite card list. And there are four red cards, Jimmy.
Hey, now Morag, of course, is kind of a personal taste selection, so maybe it's clear three or something.
Still.
I mean, I'm glad it's just not all green and blue.
So I narrowed it down for me to three cards, which were Balaged Recovery, Thieving Skydiver, and Jessica's Will. I find myself putting those cards into most decks with that color, or wanting to.
Yeah. I would definitely agree with Balaged Recovery. I'm going to say Keeper of the Accord just because it is finally a move in the direction that we need white to go. And we just talked about Jessica's Will being our favorite powerful new card. So, of course, that's going to be one of my favorites, too.
Yeah, I think for me, Jessica's Will wins, which is unfortunate because I don't want the most powerful card and then my favorite card to be the same thing. But it's a mono red card, so... Well, it's not... Yeah. It's not actually, that's the thing. It's not mono red. Like, Grixis deck, it goes in it. Like,
I don't care.
Gruul deck, I'm putting Jessica's Will in there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is it deck? Yes, Jessica's Will. Thank you.
Yeah. Oh, definitely in Is It Spells.
Yep.
I'm going to say Balaged Recovery because it replaces a land, and y'all know how I like to roll with reducing lands in my deck. So, good job.
Yeah.
I love those modal DFCs.
Balaged Recovery, that's another card like Jessica's Will. Just seriously, buy 5 or 6 of them. They're cheap right now.
Put them in all the...
DFCs. Yeah. In like 2 years, you're going to be like, I wish I had more Balaged Recovery, and they're not so cheap anymore.
Mm-hmm. Okay, speaking of new cards, one of our favorite topics.
It made it off the table.
It did. How did red and white fare? So we saw this year the continuation of pushing red into these new archetypes of big damage dealers and more sources of impulsive draw. So I thought red actually did really good. We had, for the big damage category, Fiery Emancipation, Terror of the Peaks, Jessica, Thrice Reborn, Double Vision, it's like doubling spells. That's a lot of stuff there that's sort of in the same vein. Obosh, if you want to count it, even though it's Rakdos. for the impulsive drawing card advantage. Again, Jeskka's Will. But then we also had Valakut Exploration.
Oh, that card's really
Breach.
Good, too. Yeah. We didn't talk about that already.
Maybe we can replace Morag with Valakut Exploration.
Valakut Exploration is so good.
Yeah.
Wow. Good. Man, Red made out really well this year.
They did. I'm as happy as a clam.
Yeah. Underworld Breach.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
And then Ramp and Mana Advantage, Leyline Tyrant lets you keep the red mana as you pass phases. And then Kessig Trapper, Elena Kessig Trapper, taps for red mana too. So, boom, that's Ramp.
We should say here, real quick aside, we messed up in that we said Helena and Elena. Helena and Elena, we said that they were probably sisters. They're not. They're lovers. They're partners. That's our bad.
Literal partners.
Yeah.
And figurative partners.
Right. Which actually makes sense now that you think about it.
Yeah.
So anyway, we messed that up and we apologize to everybody out there who felt marginalized by that. That was just,
we'll do
our
more
own implicit bias. And like, yeah, it's good to confront it. Like, yeah, like I'll just own that and say that we need to do a better job. So apologies. Okay. To wrap it up, Red did awesome this year.
They did great. They did the best they've ever done, I think, since the beginning of our podcast.
We just named a red card as the best card and favorite card of the year.
Wow.
Card of the year goes to...
Someone wake me up. Jeskka's Will.
Someone play the music while I'm doing my acceptance speech.
We'll play you off too.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about White, which unfortunately
they got some toys, but it's not even close to the same degree as Red, actually, to be honest.
Which is fine, I think, if Red's doing a little better than White, but I feel like White, it didn't even get the second most.
Yeah, and Josh always says this too. White needs to do better than other colors to catch up.
Right.
And the other colors need to slow down so that the worst colors can catch up.
So White did get some toys, though. In the card advantage category, they got Mangara the Diplomat.
All right.
Verge Rangers.
Yeah, just because it gets more lands out. That is kind of like Ramp or... Verge Rangers is different. Verge Rangers lets you play lands off the top of the library.
Yeah, so it's like half a card when you do that. I mean, it's half a card every turn, say. Maybe more like a third of a card. Man, we're really stretching for card advantage then.
Yeah, I know. For Ramp, though, Keeper of the Cord, like we just said, and then the not-so-great Cartographer's Hawk. Which
it's okay. We've tried it out a few times, and it does some stuff, but yeah.
It's slow. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, a little disappointing that that's the best we can come up with for this year. Keeper of the Cord, I think, the best of that bunch. They did get some other cool strategies, like Exile Flicker stuff. Which
I think, what they're doing with Red. Red goes into big burn damage. White's going to go into Exile Flicker synergies.
So they got Idol of Endurance, Livio, the Oathsworn Sentinel, Promise of Tomorrow.
Yep.
So a bunch of ways to kind of get that card advantage. Plus, they did play around a little bit more with that return 3 CMC or less stuff, Trove Warden and some things like that.
Yeah, that's right.
From your graveyard to the battlefield directly. So
and brought back in Savin's Reclamation is sort of where they've been pushing that as well in the past. So I want White to catch up. I really want them to have more graveyard synergy if that's where they're going. I think that's totally fine for White. Please.
But they got to have some ramp and some card draw. I don't think these other ways really make up for that. Yeah. Card advantage is not the problem necessarily. It's card draw because it just smooths out your early game and makes it so that you have the same amount of resources later in the game to keep up with the other colors. Yeah. We saw the game where Rachel...
played Keeper?
Yeah, where Rachel played Keeper, and that one card gave her enough mana so that near the end of that game, when everybody else had 11 or 10 mana, she was still in it with 9 or 10 mana herself. Mm-hmm. Imagine in that game, she didn't have Keeper, she has 6 mana.
Ugh.
She just cannot win that game with half as much mana as everybody else because she can only do half what everybody does on everybody's turn.
True.
So White really needs, and it's the same as with cards, right? If you get to the end of the game and you just have 2 cards and everybody else has 6, you just have less options. So you just have to get more lucky with what you've drawn. Yeah, White just, they just need help. I say it every time, so I guess I'll stop now.
Yeah, maybe we'll see it next year because, you know, we started complaining about this more than a little less than 2 years ago. Who knows? Maybe at this point they're starting to get there. We'll see. All right, toys for everyone else, though. This is a question I was asking. How did the lesser-served archetypes do, or archetypes that aren't just sort of like the blatant, you know, we know what this is and what it does?
They're not landfall or wheel decks?
Yeah, and I also want to know, like, are we pushing things too hard in direction for deck builders and sort of making it like this is what you have to do? But I think we did really well here. For tokens, we had the Ozolith and Cryptic Trilobite, or Trilobite. For the Pirates, geez, it's like half of Commander Legends if you're a Pirates player.
Yeah, Pirates definitely the tribe that made out the best this year.
There's a lot of new copy stuff. Lethal Form Engine, Double Vision, Corrupt the Thumbless.
Oh, this was the first year where we were copying permanent spells on this the stack and making token copies of them as they enter. That's pretty cool.
And then the Companions, we'll talk about these later, but you know these do serve specific strategies even if you're playing them as just creatures in your deck. So Zir that had activated abilities. Umori was like a card-type tribal. Obosh is all about damage, and Yorion's all about flickering. So they did some stuff in that world.
Cool if you ignore the companion part of it.
Yeah, exactly. Don't, because that part isn't even right. You have to look up the Oracle text to figure
it's
it out.
True.
For Mill, we had Madden Cacophony, Bruvac the Grandiloquent, and just Mill became a thing, so I think that's pretty cool. Landfall got the most help, and Commanders got the most help with that too, because we had Amaranth and Kodama of the East Tree. Both of those cards love permanents entering the battlefield. Ancient Green Warden, Ashaya, Soul of the Wild, all of the stuff from Zendikar.
I'm just going to say it, like, I'm tired of Landfall.
Yeah,
I'm cool, I'm cool if they just don't make any more Landfall stuff for, like, I don't know, 6-7 years.
It also makes Fetchlands better, too, so that also drives makes that them, up potentially. Yeah. Yeah.
It's just like, and also it's just, everyone's got to play lands, and just paying people for a thing that the game just kind of makes you do, just, I don't know. I just find it kind of boring. There's so many of them might be part of the problem. I think if there were less, it would be more, whatever the word is.
Annoying.
No, you know, sure.
Progressive.
Okay.
The Monarch Enablers are here. I'm glad that we have the Court Cycle and Commander Legends and just a bunch of cards in Commander Legends that bring Monarch in.
I will say, I wish there was more Monarch present in Commander Legends, and I think the problem is Legacy.
It's good in Legacy, yeah.
Yeah, it's easy to make a Monarch card broken in Legacy, so you have to be careful. And it sucks that a format that not very many people play is making it hard for them to design cards that would be really cool in our format by having Monarch be just more prevalent. Because I think games with Monarch are just fun games.
Yeah, they're better. They're faster. They're more stuff happens.
Yeah, there's just more reason to do things, whereas a lot of times there's a reason to not do things.
Right.
Yeah.
Keep on Wheeling. This maybe is the most help that a single type and archetype's gotten.
It sucks.
Hull Breacher is going to do the Leovold thing. Wheel of Misfortune. Also, by the way, could be going into the favorite red cards just because it's another Wheel of Fortune of types.
I would like it better if it wasn't so confusing to explain.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good card, don't get me wrong, but man, the explanation when it's played.
Yeah. Seagate Restoration is MDFC that also does the wheel thing. Teferi's Angel's Insight is an instead draw trigger, so that's great for wheel decks. Xyrus the Writhing Storm and Braylon Skyshark Rider, those are both wheel commanders. Zerzoth Chaos Rider, also wheel commander. Riel the Everwise, also a wheel commander.
Just like Landfall, let's just not do any more like wheels or wheel payoffs for like 6 years.
Yeah. And then the final thing I wrote down
just was, reprint the ones we already have. I'm not saying don't reprint that stuff.
Give us more. Yeah, I want
no more new tools. Those decks are fine.
Yeah, they're beyond fine. Yeah. Trust me. More partners has, I think, the biggest contributor to the lesser serve archetypes because they're just so flexible. You can build almost any kind of deck you want now between the partners from now and then the ones in the past.
Yeah, you can find a partner combination that at least in some way helps whatever wacky idea you've had for a long time that never really had a commander, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, at the very least, like Sakashima, you could just copy an important card. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Okay, so overall, what did we think about the new cards they designed and printed for Commander in 2020? Was this a home run? Was it a single, a double? Was it lukewarm? How do you feel?
Well, the ban list didn't get bigger, really, right? And I think like the only problematic cards we have problems with, we've talked about, and they're not the worst in the world. And I think the most important thing is that none of the new cards really, only really like Amaranth and Kodama kind of went in that direction of just generically gonna do something really good, really value-based, whatever. Yeah. So I liked it. Again, another thumbs up here. Not as hard as, I would give 2 thumbs up to the partners. And the rest of it, I was like, yeah, you did good. And like I, you know, like we said, less Landfall, less Wheeling, please.
Yeah, I think everything was great except for the white cards.
Right.
We need more white cards on our list. 2021. Just give me a year where we talk about white the way we just talked about red.
Ooh, just, spicy.
Yeah, just give me a year that we do that. They deserve it. That should happen once every 5 years, right? Because there's 5 colors. So just by pure randomness, one of the years white should win and be like the color that like, yeah, this year they made out like bandits.
Yeah.
But that's literally never happened since we started the podcast. So it should be their year a couple years in a row probably.
I would like that.
Okay. All right, let's talk about the year in general, the biggest successes of the year of Commander. Reprints, I think we both thought were a success.
Definitely.
Yep.
I think Commander product tied to a set. This one, maybe, I still might change my mind this in the future if we don't like it in the future. But I thought this year, it was cool to have Ikoria with the Commander product.
I'm going
to
make the assumption that the mini Commander decks did help new players join the format. And if that assumption is correct... again, I don't have data on it. I'm just making that assumption. but if that assumption is correct, then I think it you know, that combined with the fact that we got pretty good Commander precons this year is a success of the year for sure.
Yeah. I thought the Moldo double face cards, again, for Commander players, we couldn't have given a greater gift here. It allows us to add more cards to our deck without having to take lands out. Mm-hmm. Now, you can only do it a little bit. You can't do it a ton, but it's still significant, and they're all really great. I think we're going to see more of these in the future.
I find that just about every one of my decks wants 3 to 4 MDFCs.
Yeah.
Yep. Commander Legends...
Yeah,
we both thought that's maybe for me the single biggest success of this year. The set was really,
yeah,
you know, really, really well done. Yes, a little bit of hiccups with 3 cards, but man, that's a pretty high batting average.
70 new legends, yeah. Probably 100, like more than like 100 cards that we talked about, sure, that can all fit into good decks and stuff and have some fun with it. And then finally, the new partners in Commander Legends, I thought that was a huge success. Thank goodness they went monocolor, so it didn't get crazy out of control.
Pretty amazing. They managed to do 40 new partners and really nothing in there that everybody's like, oh, why'd they do that one? They're yeah. they're all fine.
When they designed the original ones, they weren't planning for these ones to come out.
It's true.
Right? So,
okay, let's talk about the biggest... whiffs, the biggest misses of the year, of this year. Companions, I think, was a pretty big miss.
Yeah.
And it was a miss in all formats.
Yeah, it really was. They had to errata the text to be different about how it worked because it started breaking formats. Commander just straight up banned Lutrie before it ever even hit the ground because of all the problems that we had with it. And of course, we talked about that in the video as well. I think it just didn't hit the mark, I don't think.
No, it was a total miss. It was a total whiff. It was just a strikeout on the companions. I think it was their attempt to make other formats more like Commander in a weird...
Right.
You know, it's almost creatures. Like somebody walked into a meeting and was like, hey, so the data says that players like Commander. So you know what we should do? Because not all formats are like Commander. Can we make... I got an idea. Boss, what if we made the other formats more like Commander?
Oh, that's a great idea.
Yeah, what if we gave them to a card that's, you know, similar to a Commander, and it works similar to how a Commander works?
Oh, nice. I love
it. Yeah. What should we call it? We can't call it Commander. That's already taken. Companions. I'm pretty sure that's exactly a reenactment of what happened.
High fives around the room. another huge whiff of the year was Jumpstart. Where is Jumpstart? Where is it? Where the promised reprints, all that stuff. We didn't see it. I still want to play it. I think it's really fun. I think that's another great way to bring people into the format.
Yeah, I don't think this is necessarily like a miss by Wizards, right? This is a miss by the world and the pandemic.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. Because if it does have a normal release, I think it will be really successful.
Yeah, and I think they would have ideally wanted it to imagine a 2020 in a parallel universe. So there's no pandemic and everyone's going to LGSs and stuff. I think Jumpstart's everywhere.
Yep.
Yeah.
Biggest whiff of the year from a player standpoint, I think, and a community standpoint, is Walking Dead. They did say it was their best-selling secret lair ever. So clearly from a sales standpoint, it was a success. But in terms of how the community received it and how we felt about it, big whiff. And we watched them as I think they had to walk back some of their stuff and make sure that they said, like, it could be reprinted somewhere else. We promise it's not just exclusive to this, because Commander players, we got really picky over the fact that they were new cards.
I'll be honest, it wasn't my favorite thing that they got on stream and basically said, well, it was our best-selling secret layer of the year. So basically saying to everyone in the community who didn't like it, well, what do you know?
Yeah, what do you know, or your opinion doesn't matter, you didn't buy it type thing. It was a bad look. And the stream that they did right after, too, again, there's a lot of sort of like walls up defensiveness. And
I think it would have been better to just be like, okay, we realized that probably wasn't a great idea. We're going to try not to do that again.
Yeah, that would have been nice.
It's like those apologies when people do something and they come on and they do an apology, but they don't really apologize. You always have more respect for whoever, the celebrity, the athlete, whatever,
that actually
did something and comes on and goes, you know what? I totally messed up. I make no excuses.
It was my fault. Yeah. I take responsibility, not deflection, which is like, well, because of
that's
this.
That's not the person that I am, you know? Wait, what does that even mean? Just say, I screwed up. I shouldn't have done that.
Yeah.
I'm going to try not to do it again. That's way better.
That's a good apology.
Okay.
Any of you out there with partners and significant others, take note.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. Okay. Another sort of miss of the year is just the 3 cards from Commander Legends. Jeweled Lotus, Opposition Agent, Hull Breacher. I think that was, you know, like I said, their batting average really good on the set. Doesn't mean it was perfection. I wish those 3 cards didn't exist.
Don't need them.
Yep.
And then White falling further and further behind.
Which we keep talking about. So you know our thoughts on it. We wish White was better.
Yeah.
Next year in 2021.
We're looking forward to it this year in 2021.
Right, right. In 2022, when we're doing our look back at the not year of Commander, I hope we're saying White, you know, got a lot better.
Hope so too. So Josh, was the year of Commander a success or not?
I would say that it clears the bar for success. I think, you know, Commander Legends all by itself was just a really cool set and a really cool thing that happened. Again, I don't want it to happen every year, but I think it's fair to call this year a success, even though I wouldn't say that it was like perfect.
Mm-hmm.
What about you?
Yeah, too much product for one, I think. Yeah. We could have slowed down a little bit on that. But again, I'm also going to be on the side of assuming that the mini commander decks were great in bringing in new players and opening people up to the format. I think we would have a lot more data and understanding if, you know, the pandemic didn't happen and stores were open. So I think we'll see a lot more next year in terms of if they keep doing the mini commander sets, what that will look like in action a lot more. Same with Jumpstart and stuff.
Yeah. It's cool that this happened, but I don't think I want every year to be the year of Commander. It's kind of like when you go visit a really cool place and it's like, you actually know that you wouldn't want to live there because the part of the magic of it is that you don't go there all the time.
And you have a limited time there. Yeah.
Yeah. So you can really enjoy the finer things about it. But if you were there all the time, you would start to take them for granted and it would actually not probably be paradise anymore. So I think Year of Commander is kind of one of those things. I'm glad they did it. I think they should do it again, but I think that again should be in a while.
Yeah. So what are you hoping for then for Commander in 2021? Do you want more of the same, less of the same, new innovations, another type of idea to test out what's going on?
Interesting question. I think I want less of the same.
Yeah, okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I want a toned down version of it. Like if this was an S plus year, I'm fine with an A plus year.
I feel like I could spend most of 2021 just exploring the stuff that I didn't have time to pay attention to from 2020, right?
Even 2019 at a certain point, there's so many, it's just been, the products have just been ramping up and up and up across the board. There's Secret Lairs, this, ugh, it's so much to keep up with.
It honestly doesn't feel great when you jump into a game on, you know, on Spell Table or whatever, and you know, even people like us who it's our job and we literally have to talk about every new card.
Yeah.
Stuff hits the table and you're like, I'm sorry, I don't remember what that does.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know the combos or the synergies that go along with that card because just so much stuff has come out recently. Mm-hmm. And you know, for people that play the game a lot, it's not a good feeling for that to happen all the time. Once in a while, it's cool. And you're like, holy crap, that card is sweet. Take a picture of it. But when it's happening constantly and then you hit a tipping point where you're like, it's actually less fun now because I can't keep track of everything that's going on because I don't know what everything does anymore because so much new stuff has come out recently.
Good point. Oh, I'll say there is one other thing we didn't mention that was totally a success for Commander in 2020.
What's that?
Every episode of Game Nights this year was amazing. There are so many great games. All the episodes of Game Nights and Extra Turns this year, really fantastic stuff. We got lucky, of course, because we only get to really play one game when we record. So we're always hoping that it's going to be one where everyone gets to do something, go off. And I think we had a really great year in terms of that.
Yeah, some really iconic moments. You know, me getting milled out is one that I think people will never forget.
The Rakdos Charm moment. Rakdos Charming, yeah.
just the intro for the holiday episode was really, really funny.
Yeah.
I hope people enjoyed
that.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
more of the same.
More of the same for Game Nights. Yeah, we're hoping that this year we can top that. We always try and top ourselves. You know that the Kaldheim episode of Game Nights will be coming out in early February. So look forward to it, especially if you're a patron. You're going to get to watch it early.
Oh, yeah. Make sure you do that. Finally, to the listeners, do you think it was truly a great time to be a Commander player? How do you feel about this past year? How do you feel about any of the special product releases for Commander players or the Secret Lairs? And are there any cards that you thought should have gotten reprinted or just any of the topics we covered today? Let us know your thoughts in the comments below. You can always tweet at us or find us on Instagram and Facebook as well.
Yeah, remember, we're really curious what your experiences were concerning the mini Commander decks. Are you a new player that they helped usher into the format?
Are you an old player that you just liked collecting the cards and like the new Commanders?
Or are you an old player that used them to help bring new people into the format?
Yeah, one player you can pick up those mini commander decks still is cardkingdom.com/command zone. I did it. I mean, Josh, why don't you tell them about Card Kingdom a little bit then?
If you want to get a hold of those mini commander pre-con decks from Zendikar Rising or Commander Legends, maybe you want to pre-order the Kaldheim stuff. It's right on the horizon. Or maybe you just have all that Christmas and holiday money sitting in your pocket and you want to get a hold of Commander Legends or any singles, anything at all, cardkingdom.com/command zone is the best place to order because they're going to get you your stuff the fastest and in the best quality. They often ship this stuff within less than an hour after you've placed the order. I don't know how many times I've like placed an order with Card Kingdom. I get the confirmation email that it has shipped in like, you know, 50 minutes or something. It's crazy sometimes.
It is crazy. Sometimes, yeah. And of course, because of the pandemic, they are shorter staff, but they're still working around the clock and really fulfilling things on time. And we talk to people all the time that tell us like, hey, yeah, I got my stuff so quickly. It was amazing. Obviously, a little different for international people just because, you know.
Still ends up being fast. We've heard from people in Australia and Europe who are like, wow, I really did get this way faster than I thought coming from the States.
Yeah, great customer service. And of course, Ultra Pro. I think, you know, a lot of you out there are probably wondering, how can I support my local game store, especially as the pandemic continues to go on. And a great way to do it is buying product from them. You know, almost all these stores carry Ultra Pro, the play mats, the sleeves. If there's, you know, I love buying a card when I know I'm always going to play it like a commander. Your playmat's kind of like that. You're always going to be able to play on it. It's a part of your style. It's a part of your swag or whatever you want to call it. So a great way to support our show as well is just through Ultra Pro product. And it's a great way to support your LGS. You can also shop on their online store or find them on Card Kingdom.
Yeah, and they really are the best way to protect your game pieces.
Yeah.
No joke, Jimmy and I have all of our stuff in Ultra Pro products. They're the ones we personally trust.
Yeah, we love their sleeves.
All right, now it's time for the end step where we talk about something cool outside the world of Magic. We promised we would come back and we would do the end step again.
Oh, you're right.
And Jimmy, you said you've been binging a lot of things. Do you want to talk about any of the shows?
I have. I mean, I could mention The Mandalorian.
Let's talk about The Mandalorian.
Everyone's watched it, yeah. The Mandalorian is a 2-season show currently on Disney+. It takes place after The Return of the Jedi in an indeterminate amount of time between that and The Force Awakens.
Somewhat determined now.
Yeah, somewhat determined now because we've seen some things in
the
show.
Some major characters.
Yeah, help you out with that. But it's great. It's Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni. Dave Filoni studied and worked under George Lucas for all of the prequels. He's sort of seen as a spiritual successor to George Lucas and embodies a lot of the same spirit of why Lucas loved the shows yeah. and the movies. And a big part of that is Lucas wanted it to be made for kids.
Yeah.
And so I think that's actually a really important part of Star Wars because the audience is mostly man babies. Just kidding. So it is nice to have like sort of that childish spirit in a lot of the show. And the show itself, really well produced. It's fun. It's sort of like a spaghetti western with yeah. a Monster of the Week flavor. 2 seasons on Disney+. I liked it a lot. Have you seen all of it?
Yeah, I'm caught up now. I liked the second season a lot more than the first.
Me too. Significantly more, actually, I would say.
Yeah, I actually had a little bit of trouble getting through the first season in that I wasn't compelled to like watch it every night.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of, once I heard season two, everyone was like, season two is really good. I kind of, I was like, okay, I got to just finish season one. I just had to just, like force myself to watch the last two. And it's not like force yourself, like I thought they were bad. I just wasn't super into it. And then the second season, wow. Yeah, second season is really, really good.
Yeah.
They just really got it down a little bit better. Their storyline, it felt less, like you said, Monster of the Week, and more like there was
cohesive.
An overall...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, totally.
And then everyone's talking about the last episode, which I don't think we should discuss because there are some spoilers related to it. But needless to say, there is a lot to dissect after that.
As a Star Wars fan, too.
Yeah, exactly. So if you like Star Wars at all, and even if you don't, my girlfriend... really never grew up watching Star Wars, doesn't care about Star Wars, likes The Mandalorian.
Oh, great. Mine too, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I think a big part of it, too, is they have a nice balance between nostalgia and doing the Star Wars thing, and it kind of takes place in its own kind of separate world. It's not as flashy and overproduced like the new Star Wars movies. It fits in its own world, and I think it's going to be a gateway for a lot more stuff like that.
You don't need to know all the lore from everything else to have the context to understand it either.
Yeah, it's you can still enjoy it. Yeah. And the more you know, you actually enjoy it more. Like, Clone Wars fans are going to love this season, I think.
They have a lot of little Easter eggs and stuff for sure. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Big thanks to our editing, graphics, and logistics team. And I want to say that we produced a ton of extra content around Commander Legends. You probably noticed we were doing 2 episodes of the podcast a week, sometimes like 3 hours worth of stuff, plus extra turns, plus game nights in November and December was just a lot of work for our entire team.
And at the end of the year, it's tough.
Yeah, because you got the holidays in the middle of all that stuff. And, you know, we're not asking people to work on Thanksgiving and Christmas and stuff, which means, you know, putting in some extra hours on those other days just to make sure that we're still on schedule. So Craig Blanchett, Manson Lung, Ashlyn Rose, Lady Danger, Jake Boss, Josh Murphy, Alfred Estaca, Patrick Nan, Sam Waldo, Arthur Meadowcroft, and Jordan Pridgen. Everybody on our team working so hard. And we'll continue to work hard this year, of course, but just want to thank them for really ending the year strong.
Yeah, they did a fantastic job. Please send them your love or just comment. You know, if you see a little thumbnail that you love, make a comment about it because that's the kind of work that they're putting in that really, I think, you know, ups the game of the channel and what the content we can do to deliver it to you.
Yeah, and thank you everybody else out there who tuned in to all of our stuff in 2020. We got some big stuff planned, hopefully, for 2021. As we said, we're always trying to one-up ourselves, so stay tuned.
Don't forget to hit that subscribe button and that notification bell and leave a comment and a thumbs up. And also thanks to, of course, Jeffrey Palmer, who does the living card animations at the beginning of our show and sometimes behind us as well, although this one was done by Sam.
All right, everybody. Thanks for watching.
Feels good. We'll see you next time.
Peace.
For your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter @JFWong and @JoshLeeQuai. See you later, alligator.
Crunch. Greetings, humans.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.